Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit, nonpartisan forum open to the public. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at commonwealthclub.org.
Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you are in the know. I'm Russ Yarrow, a member of the Commonwealth Club's Board of Governors, General Manager of Corporate Relations at Chevron, and your chair for the program. You can find the Commonwealth Club on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. Tonight's program is another in our Innovating California series, a partnership between the Commonwealth Club and Chevron to foster dialogue about solutions to some of the most critical issues facing California. Our focus tonight is public-private partnerships and how they can stimulate jobs, education, and economic development. At Chevron, we believe sustained economic development and job creation that benefits everyone is absolutely vital to a healthy and functioning society, and we look forward to a lively discussion tonight. Our prominent panel includes the CEO of eBay, who also serves on the White House Council for Community Solutions, the mayor of Palo Alto, who is also a senior Microsoft executive, and two high-level executives from organizations that excel in helping disenfranchised people get into the workplace. To begin the discussion and to introduce our panel, it is now my pleasure to welcome our distinguished moderator, Sidney Kohara, broadcast journalist, most recently news anchor with CBS in San Francisco, and a guest host of Forum on KQED Public Radio. Ms. Kohara has also covered business and finance around the world, notably having served as CNBC's international financial correspondent based in London. I'm pleased to turn the program over to Sidney.
Thank you, Russ. As we begin the discussion, it is my pleasure to introduce our distinguished panelists. John Donahoe currently serves as president and CEO of eBay, Inc. Mr. Donahoe joined eBay in February of 2005 as president of eBay Marketplaces, where he was responsible for all elements of eBay's global e-commerce businesses. Prior to eBay, Mr. Donahoe spent more than 20 years at Bain & Company, a worldwide consulting firm based in Boston. Mr. Donahoe holds a BA in economics from Dartmouth College and an MBA from the Stanford Graduate School of Business. In addition to his eBay responsibilities, Mr. Donahoe is a member of the White House Council for Community Solutions, established by President Obama in December of 2010. The council is aimed at connecting public, private, nonprofit, and philanthropic sectors and communities across the country and identifying how those sectors can best work together to solve the nation's challenges. The council's stated goal is that every American community will have the knowledge and the tools at hand to create successful local collaboratives that address their most pressing community challenges, and every American community will have the capacity to move disconnected youth along critical pathways to education, employment, and ongoing civic participation. Sid Espinoza has been mayor of Palo Alto, California since January of this year and is the city's first Hispanic mayor. He is also the director of corporate citizenship for Microsoft Corporation. Mr. Espinoza's career has spanned the government, business, philanthropic, and nonprofit sectors. In 2009, Mr. Espinoza joined Microsoft, where he is working to establish long-term philanthropic partnerships with nonprofit organizations that improve the quality and access to education, improve the environment, and assist in workforce development and skills training. Prior to joining Microsoft, he served as Hewlett-Packard's Director of Global Philanthropy, leading that company's annual investment of tens of millions of dollars in nonprofit organizations and schools in 60 countries around the world, as well as in all 50 states. He holds a BA from Wesleyan University and a master's degree from Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. Nicole Levine is the executive director for San Francisco and the North Bay of Women's Initiative for Self-Employment, also known as WISE. Ms. Levine has more than 20 years of experience in the Bay Area private and nonprofit sectors, with a special focus on economic development. She has also provided microloans and business assistance at OBDC Small Business Finance, and she has worked with Hewlett-Packard, Agilent, and Chevron to strengthen their community programs. Ms. Levine has a long history with Women's Initiative, including serving as a volunteer, program assistant, and business trainer at different times in her career. By targeting low-income women, focusing on the needs of traditionally underserved groups, including minorities, immigrants, and welfare recipients, WISE brings new resources into local communities in a unique model. WISE graduates have started and expanded over 1,600 businesses, from photography studios to catering companies and mechanic shops. Ms. Levine holds an MBA from UC Davis. Our final panelist, John Lee, is executive director of the Bread Project, whose mission is to empower individuals with limited resources on their path to self-sufficiency through on-the-job training in its social enterprises and by providing assistance for employment in the food industry. The Bread Project has particularly offered bakery training and job assistance to people with low income. Mr. Lee recently moved into the Bread Project's executive director position after a short 2 years in their development department. As director of development, he had a pivotal role in the project's tremendous 80% growth from local community nonprofit to respected San Francisco Bay Area leader in job training and social enterprise. The Bread Project started its first class in 2001, and in 2010, expanded into an 8,000-square-foot bakery facility in Emeryville, California. Prior to joining the Bread Project team, Mr. Lee was a senior policy analyst for the Ontario Ministry of Community and Social Services in Toronto, Canada. There, he led policy projects and budget proposals aimed at helping people with disabilities improve their workplace and community participation. He also has 8 years of experience in food service, including restaurant management. Mr. Lee holds a bachelor's degree from the University of Toronto in computer science and biology with additional coursework in economics. Thank you to all of our panelists for joining us today. My first question is a very general one. I want to get the lay of the land out there from your perspective. How would you describe the current economic situation from your point of view? Talk about what you are seeing out there. John? Donahoe? Two Johns, two Sids.
I'm John 1. Or you be John 1, I'll be John 2. So, Sydney, you know, I'm an optimist. You know, I'll tell you what is not going to serve our economy well, which is CEOs and politicians sitting around talking about how bad it's going to be or how nervous they are. And my biggest concern right now is, frankly, just that. It's the narrative. Around the economy. I think the narrative may be worse than the reality. What I see, though, that makes me optimistic is that the current economic times, which there are a lot of people out of work, is creating a next round of what I would call American ingenuity and entrepreneurialism. And there's two things that I would highlight that at least we see at eBay. One is that the internet and mobile technologies are now making it possible for someone in a rural town where big company jobs may never come back, they have a chance to start a business, and they have a chance to start a business with customers that are not just in their town. They can start a national business or a global business, whether that's on eBay or anywhere across the internet. And these mobile and internet technology tools empower them to be able to do it. So we see many examples of that on eBay. And I see wonderful examples of people in these communities coming together. I was saying in the break room, one of the groups of sellers I met with on eBay a couple months ago talked about their small businessmen driving exports. And these were people that were in 4- and 6-person businesses, 8-person businesses. They hear the president talk about jobs, 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 and we need to have more exports to grow our economy, to grow jobs. And typically when you say that, you think of big corporations doing that. Well, these are people that may have 4, 5, 6 employees, and they're saying, we're now selling to customers all over the world. Half my customers come from outside the United States, one of them told me. And so I see people, perhaps out of necessity, being more creative, and technology and things like smartphones and computers and access to the Internet is giving them tools to really live out the next round of American entrepreneurialism and ingenuity. So I'm in the medium term, I'm optimistic.
Sid Espinoza, you are in the heart of Silicon Valley in Palo Alto, California. What are you seeing?
Well, I'd say my assessment, and maybe it goes to some of that negativity, though I think I end up in the same place. My assessment is really that it's volatile and that it's mixed. We see here in California, as an example, a report just came out, we're the second highest unemployment rate in the country at 12.1%, but we're also the second highest in creation of jobs over the last 6 months. So you're seeing some different stories there. Palo Alto, of course, is unique. Frankly, on any level, our economy is booming and hotter than it's ever been. Our commercial real estate's at less than 2%. Really, I'll tell you, it's about 100% right now. Sales tax is up. Housing prices are soaring. On almost every level, it's great. But I meet with mayors all across the country, and there's, you know, cities where 40% of the homes are at risk of being in foreclosure. People have very serious problems that they're facing in terms of governance. What I see, though, as well, and what gives me that optimism, and I have to say that I have a bit of a problem with the terminology we're using, public-private partnerships. I know it's the term of the day, but sometimes they're public-public partnerships. Sometimes they're whole new models around coming together for shared value systems and community collaboration for the better well-being of and for problem solving. And we're seeing that like we've never seen it before, often out of necessity. Nonprofits need to combine. Governments just can't continue to provide those services that they have to reach out to others. We have to pull in the public sector and get them to the table like they've never been before. And I'm seeing conversations happen now that I didn't even just 2 years ago. So I, too, am optimistic. It's a mixed bag in terms of the assessment of the economy. But the path forward, I think we're finally starting to get some people out of their silos and get some creative thinking.
Nicole Levine, you hear a lot of optimism so far on the panel. You're in the trenches. What about you?
Well, so, of course, I want to give some broad strokes. 1 in 6 people in this country live in poverty. Unemployment is remaining pretty stagnant right now. And while men are seeing some job recovery, women are still not seeing as much job recovery. So I want to talk a little bit now about Women's Initiative, what we do, and what it looks like from a local perspective. So we help low-income women start up and expand their own businesses by providing training, microloans or funding, and ongoing support. We work with supporting micro-enterprises, and this is defined as businesses with 5 or fewer employees and capital needs of $35,000 or less, so very small businesses. Our clients, who are they? They're low-income women. Average individual income when they come into our program is $14,000. The good news is, 1 year after going through the training, it goes up to $22,000. The women, average education is 11th grade. 80% of our women are women of color, and of that, 53% are Latina. Average age is about 39, but we've got women in our program from 18 all the way up to 79. 25% unfortunately report recent domestic violence, and all of them are facing barriers. Isolation, limited English skills, limited education, something that is getting in the way. Aging out of the workforce, not being able to find a job. So what does this really look like here in the Bay Area? In Marin County, we have a 75-year-old woman who went through the program last year. She had been laid off 3 years ago, had been doing odd jobs wherever she could get them. She had, in her past life, owned an art gallery, and she was able to go through our training, write a business plan, she's in mid-October, she's going to be opening her gallery in Sausalito. She got a microloan, she got the training, and now we're giving her the ongoing support. Another example, very successful restaurant in San Francisco, the Front Porch. I don't know if anybody's eaten there, but the owner was a waitress in a, you know, not high income job. She was doing fine, but she had a dream. She came to our program. She now owns a very successful restaurant where she's employing over 20 staff people. I have to say, I don't eat meat, but their fried chicken bucket is making me want to change. So that's a little bit of who we have coming into the program, what their stories look like. We are really trying to address these issues of unemployment, underemployment creatively. And though we're seeing more and more women entering the program because of foreclosure, because of challenges, we're also seeing more and more women becoming economically independent by starting their own businesses. So indeed, I fall out as optimistic.
And John Lee with the Bread Project. 3 out of 4 of my panelists are optimistic. Are you?
I as well share some of that optimism. Recently, EDD came out with a report talking about the growth areas in certain sectors of the California economy. Food service and food preparation is in the top 10 for the next 10 years in their projections. Bakery production is a little bit lower, however, there is some growth there. For us, our training program is about providing people with the on-the-job experience that they need to transition into the workplace, whether that's about teaching them how to be on time to a job or shift, providing them with the experience to work with other people or to deal with their employers. Everything that we do in our social enterprises, which is really just another way of talking about an organization that has a double bottom line profit as well as social good, is to help people with the experience that they need to then find jobs in the workplace. What we are seeing, though, on the ground is that there are definitely more people coming to us for these kinds of services. The need is out there. That was one of the main reasons why we decided to expand so drastically and given the opportunity by some of our great partners like SemiFreddy's. In terms of our results, we're also seeing an impact there, also due to the economy. Our employment rates for the last 3 years have seen dips. We still remain positive. The majority of our graduates are still getting jobs. And one of the things that we are noticing also is that the labor market is increasingly becoming more a buyer's market. What I mean by that is that median wages are being depressed, especially in the service industry. In addition, we're seeing a trend towards temporary jobs or part-time jobs. Obviously, this has a huge impact on our participants who are all low income, very similar to what Nicole is describing in her target population. They are facing many barriers to employment, such as being formerly incarcerated, living in single families. Often our trainees are living with their grandmothers, not even their parents. The list goes on. Formerly homeless, people with a long history of drug use. But despite all of those things, you see these really nice gems along the lines of, what Nicole said about some of the great successes that we've had. We've had a former insurance underwriter come to our program. Her skill is no longer fitting the market need out there and needing to have that quick career change. One of the benefits of our program is that it is quite short and intensive, and so she was able to get through our program and then find a job in a bakery. Another form of success is somebody coming to our program who had a long history of methamphetamine abuse. That person going to a job every day and sticking it out. For many of us who I think are a little bit sheltered from that kind of a background, this is an amazing achievement. We always like to say that if we could take somebody from 0 to 30%, that is a great job for us. 80% might be getting that job. That is, of course, the ideal that we want to attain. But even having them come out with more self-esteem, more confidence when they go out to meet people and network on their interviews or job applications, that's a real great success for us. Something else that I would like to talk about is related to the economy is the state of California and the decreases to education. As many of us know, Adult education has been severely cut in many of the counties in the Bay Area. Notably in Oakland, they are now running at about 10% of their previous capacity from 2008. Berkeley Adult School and Alameda Adult School both had a $1 million cut from their respective budgets. And so we're seeing a shift away from public education in terms of vocational training to nonprofits such as ourselves. And that is being reflected in the increase in our applicant pool, as well as the type of demographics that we're seeing in our applicant pool. Many of them have no high school education. Of note, some
John,
of them...
John, let me jump in real quick because it brings to mind something when we talk about vocation versus education. What do you think works better, or does there need to be a partnership there?
I think, and many of my colleagues would probably agree, that there needs to be a certain level of partnership. The irony is that the same barriers that people face getting into employment is the same barriers that they face on a system level from either government agencies, whether it's colleges, EDD, One-Stop Career Centers, CalWORKs, what have you. There isn't really a seamless system of service delivery that enables people to jump over those barriers to get to continue on their path to self-sufficiency.
When we look at government participation in a lot of the programs you mentioned, our partnerships, private, public, already going to get to the questions. One of them that has come in is how much government participation is too much? I mean, what is the proper role for the government to play in public-private partnerships? Sid?
Well, I'm happy to start, though. I might be a little bit biased in this. You know, in Palo Alto, we have a long history of public-private partnerships, and part of the reason, actually, that I was elected, now that I think about it, is that I was working on establishing a major public-private partnership for our city and serving on a couple of boards to do that around our art center facility, and people said, you know, you're doing such a great job here, and frankly, the city needs to do more things like this. Could you step up and run for council and make more of these things happen? And why was that important, and why did people push for that? Because they saw that these things weren't going to happen with the government alone if you didn't have this type of coalescing of dialogue and ideas around solutions for some of our real problems within our community. So, you know, I think that governments can serve as a convener. I think they can serve to highlight certain programs. We're using our city as a test bed in partnerships with Stanford for new technologies that they're creating. They're going to help us provide, we own our own utility, so help us provide services like most environmentally friendly and appropriate programs through our utilities and test bed new technologies through Stanford. It's not just philanthropy that we're seeking. It's not just, trying to get nonprofits dollars from companies. That's not what I think we're talking about here. It's really coming together and saying a community, however you're defining it, your neighborhood, your city, your region, your state, faces real problems. And how are you going to bring the right people to the table to solve those and to think about what uniquely people bring? And just quickly, with the Microsoft hat briefly, we came together with a bunch of legislators here in California, as well as nonprofits, academics, business leaders, a few years ago, and talked about what problems were facing the state. And front and center, people said jobs. You know, this really is the problem. It's not the sexiest thing necessarily to do in terms of philanthropy. There's a lot of other things, bringing in kids, bringing other things. It's a lot better STEM. Tech companies tend to do STEM. But we heard sincerely, especially from government, that this is where we needed to have a focus. And we created partnerships, investing tens of millions of dollars across the state in nonprofit organizations that were doing phenomenal work. WIMS Initiative was one of them. And we can track real results. And that is each of those sectors, nonprofit, government, business, et cetera, academic, need to think about the roles that they've had differently, need to think about having a different type of responsibility in solving these types of problems. So I think being that convener, highlighting these types of solutions, really identifying those needs and helping people think differently is the role that government can play. When does it cross that line? I have plenty of examples of when it does, but I think I don't know, maybe I'll let others answer that in terms of, you know, when it becomes inappropriate.
You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. Today, we're discussing how public-private partnerships can boost America's jobs, education, and economic development. Our panelists today, John Donahoe, CEO, eBay, member, White House Counsel for Community Solutions, Sid Espinoza, Director of Corporate Citizenship, Microsoft Corporation, Mayor, City of Palo Alto, California, Nicole Levine, Executive Director of Women's Initiative for Self-Employment for San Francisco and the North Bay Area, and John Lee, Executive Director, The Bread Project. I'm Sydney Kohara, and we continue our conversation now. John, you are a member of the White House Council for Community Solutions. I believe that started in January. Tell us how it's going, progress made.
Well, you know, the council is something that's got a great passion of the president and the first lady. And it's frankly, they want exactly what Nicole and John are doing, which is they want to bring people in communities, in this case youth, the disconnected youth, youth that may not otherwise have a good path into the workforce and into a healthy, sustainable adult life, and to create pathways into education, to create pathways that will lead to jobs, and careers, and to create pathways into being constructive and productive members of society. And what has been so striking to me, in addition to the strong commitment of the President and the First Lady for this, is that so many of the ingredients are there. You know, that the examples of organizations that are doing this in small pockets all across the country are really striking. And what really needs to happen, and what the council, where the council is coming down, is more, you call it public-private partnerships, or I like what you said, public-public partnerships, or it's just coming together. How do we stitch these things together in a way that multiplies the impact? And it's not clear we need to reinvent anything new here. What is clear is that we've all got to get the organizations that are on the front lines and the government and companies working together to have tenfold the impact on getting these disconnected youth or other people who are facing hardship back in on a constructive path.
Well, one of the questions that came in, and certainly would be of interest to our listeners, what is the appropriate way to submit ideas for consideration to the White House Council for Community Solutions?
Well, all the...
You're going to give out your email address?
My email is john@ebay.com, and believe me, 25 million active eBay sellers use it regularly. So all the commission's proceedings are a matter of public record, and you can go on to our website and certainly pass on your thoughts or ideas. It's a very public process. So if you've got ideas, go to the White House Community Solution. Just go to the White House website, and you should be able to find it quite easily.
So let's talk creative solutions. Where do we start? Does it start at the grassroots level when we look at a successful business model? John?
I would say absolutely. Going back to the conversation about the public-private partnerships, clearly that space needs to exist. In addition to that, not just the space, but a system of evaluation and selecting those innovations that are doing very well and producing the results and growing those. And I think the government has the capacity and the scope to make that happen at the state level, regional level, national level. That's very important. Because at the grassroots level, we don't have that kind of capacity to expand like we need to. Because we don't necessarily have the constraints that, the bureaucracy or what have you, where we are able to put good ideas into use to implement new ways of thinking, of approaching problems, and coming up with the solutions.
So I want to say that our program is working. We are a creative solution that is working. We, you know, you looked at the economic stimulus money that went out, $60,000 to $200,000 it was claimed to create jobs. We know that we can create a job for $1,500. That means $1 million investment is 148 new jobs in 2012. In 5 years, that will be 500 and nearly 50 jobs. So we know our program's working. But we're small. We're growing, but we're still small. And we desperately need our partners. We need our corporations. We need our government. We need them to be our voice. We need them to convene us. We need them to invest in us financially. We need them to give us access to markets for our clients. We're applying for our clients to be part of eBay's world of goods so that they can sell their products through eBay. We need the support from Microsoft so that they are investing in our software programs so that we have the infrastructure. We need our partners to advocate for us, to help us be the voice at the table so that we can get what we're doing so well out into this country.
Well, as John said, all the ingredients are there. So what is missing? Why don't nonprofits and corporations, philanthropy and government, why don't they collaborate more often? That's a question from the audience. Sid?
Oh, it's an easy answer. So, no, these are very complex, obviously, problems. But I think, if I can simplify it anyway, I would just say that there doesn't tend to be a team approach. You know, academia, I'll set aside for a second because they really tend to segment themselves. But government as well, we operate the way we do, and we bring in some nonprofits to do some things. But in general, we silo ourselves. And then businesses and nonprofits, in the way that we're talking about them, often have a relationship where nonprofits feel like we really need the money and are constantly asking companies, and companies really don't give as much as they could or should. It's a very simplistic way to sum this all up, but the bottom line is, across those borders, there hasn't been a lot of discussion about shared issues in one's community and what roles people can play and what they can really bring to the table and what an extra sacrifice means or what real partnership means. Those types of dialogues aren't happening. I have to say I applaud the Clinton Global Initiative meeting today. I know I hadn't been thinking about this, but today for Microsoft, we're announcing a big partnership there around laptops and digital divide, which is still a huge issue, though a lot of people aren't talking about it these days, to really give. We're going to be doing a million laptops out to children, looking at really communities of need across the country over the next couple of years. The point is, what happens at the Clinton Global Initiative is that they do a very good job of bringing people across sectors to really talk about problems and then put a stake in the ground. That often is the step that's missing. People will convene and talk about issues, but then don't really commit to creating sustained change. And so, I think that's why it happens. We're siloed and we need to have a team approach. And shorter answer, sorry.
Well, let's have some creative thinking here. And John Donahoe, I would like to ask you this question. How would you develop the public-private partnership if you had the opportunity to run it as a global marketplace? You ran eBay Marketplaces
for a while. There's no simple answer to that, but the thing that comes to mind for me, and it gets to what Sid was just talking about, you've got to set some goals. The at times the sector is stuck in describing the problem and describing how hard it is, and then talking and talking and talking, and at some point we are talking about on the commission, do we set a goal of saying 1 million people, 1 million kids by a certain time? So now it's not what, it's how. And now you turn to a community, you turn to Palo Alto, and you say, you get the employers, you get the nonprofits, you get the local government together and say, we have to help do our part toward that million-person goal to bring them in. And our part is going to be, 50,000 jobs or 50,000 examples. How are we going to do it? And so the thing that I think the public sector, private sector can help bring to this is set some goals. And then use that as a catalyst to get people together. And I do believe people have to come together ultimately. I think the goals can be national or state, but I think ultimately people have to come together at the local frontline community level.
What is the government's role, though, to help this succeed? To find these solutions and to help these programs succeed.
Government's got the bully pulpit, so government's got to get people's attention. They can be the catalyst. They can be the catalyst by setting a bold goal and catalyst by getting people in the room to start talking to one another, and then they can create some incentives. Then my two cents is the government needs to get out of the way and let the goodness happen.
Think you could do that?
That's why I'm not. That's why I'm not in government.
Nicole, you look like you wanted to say something about the government's role.
I think I said it before, but we really need the government. We need the government to be our voice. We need advocates in high up places because we are doing good work and we don't have the resources to do as much as we could do. So we really depend on the partnerships.
One of the questions that came in is, what about middle class business loans? We talk about helping lower income and people who are on the edge, but so many people are hurting in this struggling economy. So what about middle class business loans? Where can a small business owner of a startup go for a loan for initial capital? And is there a cap, say, Nicole, on with your program that if someone wants to start something?
So this is not what Women's Initiative does, but I do know a bit about this. So Women's Initiative, we do provide funding, but it's for loans, microloans, but it's for the women who go through our program, and you must be low income to be able to go through our program. Now, let me say, we have a lot of formerly middle income women who are more and more starting to come through our program because of this economy, being out of work, losing their homes. So we certainly are seeing that. But if you don't qualify, where do you go? And there are many programs, there are some programs, particularly related to the SBA, where you can get help in Oakland, OBDC, Oakland Business Development Corporation is one of them. I would go to the SBA's website as a first resource and use them in your local communities. Go to them, talk to them, because they're the ones that are going to know how to access the capital. If you don't fall into the high income or the low income range.
Sid?
If I could just follow on, I'd add that there are a host of organizations that work with segmented groups right now in terms of jobs and skills training, but also helping that step towards entrepreneurship, whether it's Trans Access working with the disabled community doing incredible work, Catholic Charities, this is again across the country, working with recent refugees, mm-hmm. Women's Initiative obviously working with some incredible women entrepreneurs, OICW covers a lot of this down on the peninsula, I know, OICW and JobTrain, a lot of those middle-class entrepreneurs who are going in a different path given the economy. So I'd encourage you to really research some of these organizations. People think during these tough times that there isn't help and there aren't paths out there, but you'd be surprised, especially during these times, how many organizations are really stepping up to the plate and providing the types of services that could help entrepreneurs really get started.
What do all of you find? Do you find that most businesses or companies really want to do something to help other people? They just don't have a structure or a framework or know about it? Do you find that you have to be proactive to get help, or the businesses coming to you and offering help? How does that work?
If I may, we have a lot of really great business partners locally. To name a few, we have Mr. Espresso coming in. They're a local coffee roaster in Oakland. They come in and they provide us with free coffee barista training for our participants. That is to help them find jobs in cafes. In addition to those things, they provide us with in-kind donations of goods and supplies. In addition to that, we engage actively with other employers and businesses in the area through our Business Advisory Council, and it's a little bit of both. It's us approaching them because we have a specific need, or them coming to us because they see the great work that we're doing and they say, hey, I want to get involved. I feel that in addition to having my business here, I need to make this community thrive, and I have that responsibility, and I want to work with you to make that happen. And I think that's very common with a lot of nonprofits, and nonprofits do depend on that.
Sid?
I think we are missing the mark here as a country. When you look globally, the number of companies in other countries that step up can sometimes be a lot less than the United States, and there is a philanthropic history in this country, to be sure. But I have to say, with the amount of money that companies are making and that execs are making across this country, it is breathtaking how little is being given back and how little of a focus there is on community needs. Obviously, I work at Microsoft, and I could talk about all that we're investing. But the truth is, and it is significant, and I think it's very meaningful and for the right reasons, but here in the Silicon Valley, we are ranked third in terms of cash corporate giving. We're not even headquartered here. We're headquartered in Redmond. We do a lot more giving there. The amount of giving realistically that we give in the region should be topped by all of those other tech companies headquartered there. It's absurd that companies give so little, both to the nonprofit sector, but generally in terms of addressing community and social needs, in my opinion.
John Donahoe, I imagine you might have something
you know,
to say.
I can argue. You can debate both sides of this, and I think both are true. You know, I think companies and businesses give a lot. And it's where you give it through your foundation, you give it through your donations to local communities, you give it through the time of your employees, you give it through your business. Our business happens to create economic opportunity for millions of people around the world. So I think the paradigm that you've got to be careful. It's not zero sum. Where I agree with Sid is I think Silicon Valley in general has a lot of young companies, and young companies haven't yet matured into being sustainable, consistent local citizens. I watch our company. We're learning. We're growing into that. HP does a great example, for instance, of a company that's been around. Or I sit on the Intel board. Intel does a fabulous example. So I think Silicon Valley does have some growing up to do on this dimension. And I'd agree with Sid there.
Sid, I want to go back to you because before you worked at Microsoft, you worked in global philanthropy at HP, and that company invested tens of millions in all 50 states and 60 countries. So give me an example. What is working out there and what isn't? Are there models that we should be researching?
In terms of partnership?
Well, partnerships, right, and philanthropy.
Yeah, well, specific to the introduction that you gave, what was commentary on the education investments that we were making there, similar to those at Microsoft, I think the goal really needs to be looking at the whole pipeline, looking at kids at any point in that stage. We have kids falling through for different reasons at different points. And we really need to look at that holistically. I think that companies, frankly, can do a better job of really stepping in and partnering with school districts and with departments of education to think about that pipeline and think about the unique skills that they can bring and programs that they can bring to strengthen that pipeline. What models are working? You know, frankly, again, I go back to, not to sound like a broken record, but maybe it's the third time that someone out there is going to listen and get it. I think what's working is when you really see convenings across sectors to talk about real problems that a society or a community is facing and people putting real stakes in the ground about the role they're going to play in that. And there are different forums that are doing that around the world, frankly, sometimes led by nonprofits, sometimes led by government, sometimes led by business. But when it brings real metrics, and then people are held accountable, that's the model that you're seeing that's working. And one sector trying to charge off in its own direction is most often where you see failure.
Amen.
You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program. Today we're discussing how public-private partnerships can boost America's jobs, education, and economic development. Our panelists are John Donahoe, CEO, eBay, member, White House Counsel for Community Solutions. Sid Espinoza, Director of Corporate Citizenship, Microsoft Corporation, and Mayor of the City of Palo Alto, California. Nicole Levine, Executive Director of Women's Initiative for Self-Employment for San Francisco and the North Bay Area. And John Lee, Executive Director, The Bread Project. I'm Sydney Kohara, and we continue now. I want to go back to that the idea of education and partnerships, not only with schools and with technical training, but a question comes in: what type of university partnerships have eBay and Microsoft created to ensure that graduates have skills required for current and future jobs? We can talk about the state of education and where we are and how far we need to go to be competitive.
Well, I'll talk about two examples I'm aware of. One at eBay. What's interesting is when you talk to some of the educators, what they say to us is, what our kids need is mentorship. We're giving them the skills. What they need is the mentorship to learn how to function and thrive in the environment. And so 2 weeks ago, I met We have a cycle of kids that come in, and they're being mentored by eBay employees. And their questions are not around do they have the skills. They're working hard in school to get the skills, but their questions are more basic, more fundamental, I would say. And it was interesting that this is where the energy is being pulled, and our employees love doing this.
What sort of questions do they ask?
Oh, they'll ask, like, did you know what you wanted to do when you were graduated from college before you went to college? Did you know what you want your major to do? How do you spend your time every day? Do you watch TV? I mean, and to some extent, it's humanizing people that are successful, that can be inspiration and motivational and mentoring. I'll say Intel, who I think is one of the Silicon Valley companies, along with HP, that it really invests in the community and really invests in our society. Education is a particular area of focus for them. And as we were talking earlier, they invest an enormous amount in science students around the country to really reinforce them, particularly women science students, to give them the kind of support and reinforcement through contests, through recognition, through awards that promote more women scientists and more scientists in general. And our country needs more engineers and scientists if we're going to be globally competitive. So two examples of companies that I think are doing some.
Another question. Do you see opportunities for public-private partnerships with providing internet access to the underserved, since we have so many people in this country who can't afford it through the various telecom companies? I think, Sid, you mentioned this through the Microsoft initiative. Yeah. We'll let you do it one more time.
If I may then, since I have the mic, and I don't mean to hog the mic, but just really quickly on the last point about universities and really planning for the future. Granted, once we're talking about university level education, we're not necessarily, though you could argue with community colleges and some college programs, you're talking more vocational. But if you're really talking about the jobs of the future, and we're having a broader conversation about that, we know that of the top 30 jobs that are estimated to come online over the next 10 years, the majority of those will require STEM foundation and a solid science, technology, engineering, math background. And the bottom line is that training needs to start well before university education. So when you ask, are we providing that university education, the problem is that in middle school, girls and people of color are dropping out at extraordinary rates across all of those STEM fields and across all geographies of the country. And so the work that I have focused on and that Microsoft has focused on now and at HP before that is really looking, starting in those middle school years, to make sure that we're creating a solid pipeline so that by university level education, they have the skills to be successful so that they are prepared for those jobs that you're talking about. And then very quickly on the digital divide, it's unfortunate that we really have moved beyond that in a lot of the social dialogue within our country. It probably was 10, 15 years ago that there was a lot of discussion about communities of need, and now people assume that most people have a computer at home or they have some access maybe through the library or something else, but it is not their life online, which means that they're living and they're working and they're communicating online. And so what you're having is a whole generation of people coming up without that skill set and without that being their lifestyle and their foundation for how they're going to operate. And by the time they get to the workforce or they get advanced in schools, they don't have the skills and they don't have that preparation. So we have to continue to focus on the digital divide and make sure that we're focused on those communities of need and providing technology access there.
I want to address this to Nicole and John. In the nonprofit world and in the trenches, what are you seeing with your clients who are coming in and education, lack of or desire for give us some examples.
Well, in terms of the digital divide specifically, yeah, I was going to say, so one of...
And what would help them? What would help them?
Absolutely. Digital divide is absolutely relevant with our clients that are coming in. And we teach our program using laptops, actually, that were originally donated by HP. We could use some new ones, but they're a little old. All right. But we, so our classes, we do them, we have the laptops in our classroom. The women come in, most of them don't have laptops at home or access to computers at home, so they have to use the computers that we have in our classrooms. And it's kind of shocking to us, but particularly in our we do our program in Spanish and in English, and in our Spanish program, we are teaching women how to turn on computers. And teaching them not how to use a computer or not how to, not anything sophisticated, but how to get an email address. I mean, we are, it's amazing to us, but we've really had to adjust our program to make sure we are incorporating really basic technology skills into what we're teaching. So it's here, even. It's not across the country. It's right here in the Bay Area that we're really needing to work on it, and it's crucial. They write their business plans on the laptop computer, so it's really incorporated in the program, but it's challenging.
We have a very similar experience at the BREAD Project in the sense that people come in not knowing how to use their email or how to navigate on a browser. Nowadays, most of the job applications for the larger food-related companies are being done online. For example, Safeway, they have this massive online form that would turn into something like 6 or 7 pages, and it's actually timed. I don't know if that's an industry secret, but... And they do rank their applicants based on the timing as well as the information that they provide on that form. So not knowing how to type or how to use email is a real disadvantage for our population. One of the ways that we try to get around that is by providing them with access to computers, whether that's by creating a computer lab. We also need computers. or by accessing other resources. So, for example, we have a really great partnership with the Berkeley Adult School, and we access their computer labs there. Of course, even with basic training, it does take an hour and a half to help them write their resumes. And it's not us writing their resumes. It's them writing the resumes and us assisting in that task.
Another question that came in, how is the public assured that the private-public partnerships aren't designed to simply extend the life of, say, unviable companies at the taxpayer's expense?
Or how do we assure that the private sector is not extending the life of unviable public governments?
We could do it that way, too.
I mean, to some extent, a private company that's struggling is not, this is not where their focus is going to be. I mean, the focus has got to be on the healthy and successful companies and governments and nonprofits really coming together in the way, Sid, I think you've talked about it several times, and creating the example, creating the positive examples of how this can work. Because when it does work, it's very powerful. And we got to get away a little bit from the zero-sum narrative, you know, zero... Corporations are good or bad. Governments are good or bad. Nonprofits are good or bad. We've got to move beyond that. We got to start acting. We got to start building some successful examples and then promoting them, then talking about them.
There were a couple of political questions in here that I will stay with about how to I mean, we see the optimism here where I think a lot of people don't see it in Washington. So my last question to my panelists. One of the goals of the White House Council for Community Solutions, John Donahoe, that you sit on that council, is to enlist more Americans and leaders to help nurture and grow solutions to local problems. What can you say to those leaders and our listeners to encourage them to become involved in creating local partnerships and finding solutions? John Lee, would you like to start?
What I would say to encourage people to be more involved, obviously, donate. Second, volunteer. Many nonprofits depend on their volunteers. I think I speak for nonprofits across the country by saying that we are severely under capacity.
and we need people to help us help other people. Whether this be by working one-on-one with one of our trainees to help them write their resume, to help them with their basic numeracy, to help them work out fraction problems so that they can do their baker's percentages. If that's lending your computer skills so that you can help us set up your network, all of those things we need. We recently had this really great project with Chevron. They had a bunch of business analysts, financial analysts help us come up with our business plan. And that kind of in-kind contribution is tremendous for us. We're a staff of 14, and there's only four of us who are administrators. And so there is this huge workload that needs to be alleviated to prevent that kind of burnout that you see so often. Other ways to be involved is, as Nicole was saying, to be an advocate. You see an organization that's doing the kind of work that you like, you talk about it. Talk about it nonstop to everybody that you know, your friends, your family, to people that you meet on the bus. It doesn't really matter. The more that people know about the good things that are happening by local nonprofits or national organizations, the better. And that just increases the awareness of the things and the issues that we're dealing with.
I want to absolutely echo what John said, but I also I want to add, for companies looking to get involved, what is most valuable for us as nonprofits is certainly financial. It's a combination of financial support and smart support, employee engagement, that can really help us with some of the things that we can't do. We can't maybe afford the consulting, the strategic planning help, or the high-level mentorship that we need. So a combination which both eBay and Microsoft do and Chevron do very well is financial and employee engagement very valuable for us as nonprofits.
Well, you mentioned leaders. I guess I would start by saying, you know, my opinion is everybody can serve as a leader in their own way in working on these issues. My mom just returned from 3 years in the Peace Corps in Honduras and the Dominican Republic, and it's amazing. I just thought of it because of your question about the digital divide. My sister is a principal, very successful, God bless her, principal of the largest elementary school in East Palo Alto. And the parallels in the struggles that they were facing over the digital divide and education challenges, et cetera, highlighted for me both the global nature of these problems, but also the fact that each person really can step up and make that difference. I would just add that what I really would encourage people, though, to do is whatever organization you're associated with in any of these sectors, that you really hold people accountable, hold your organization and the leadership within accountable to be part of these conversations, to really enter the dialogue in a meaningful way and to create change. We have to do that from within whatever sector you're in.
I mean, I don't think I have that much to add other than to you know, I heard the First Lady describe the reason this president got elected is because he spoke to our country, and he spoke to particularly young people, and with a message of get involved. This is your country. This is our country, and we have to get involved, and we have to get involved in a way that takes away the rancor of that's crept back into the political dialogue, and we can't have that down to the local community. And I'll tell one small example on my about getting involved and how inspiring people like Nicole and John can be. eBay's head of HR called me last night. She said, I'm so excited. You're sitting on a panel that of an organization I sit on the board of, and the founder's fantastic, and she so inspires me. And so there's a case where Kristen's gotten involved, but the inspiration that I think we have so many social entrepreneurs that can inspire these people and take advantage of their energy is, you know, I think, as I said earlier, I think all the ingredients are there. We just got to start doing it. And we have to be, I loved what you said, Sid, we have to hold ourselves accountable and hold each other accountable to say, what's the action we're taking?
So, John Donahoe, when you go back to the next meeting of the White House Council for Community Solutions, what are you going to take from this panel?
I take more evidence of the formula, the ingredients that they're there. And so it's not about what, it's about how we're going to start coalescing. And the community is working with corporations, or the council is working with corporations, is working with nonprofits, and obviously it's working with both state and local governments. And I do think this is just a little bit about let's start doing it. Let's set some goals for how many women in the Bay Area we're going to get into the workforce, how many people that in John's target audience we're going to get into the workforce. And then I think we can begin to coalesce the different stakeholders to do it.
It really almost starts with personal connections, doesn't it?
Yes.
In a way.
Absolutely.
Well, unfortunately, we've reached the point in our program where it is time to close, and I want to thank our panelists. John Donahoe, CEO, eBay, and member, White House Counsel for Community Solutions. Sid Espinoza, Director of Corporate Citizenship, Microsoft Corporation, Mayor, City of Palo Alto, California. Nicole Levine, Executive Director of Women's Initiative for Self-Employment for San Francisco and the North Bay Area. And John Lee, Executive Director, The Bread Project. I'm Sydney Kohara. We also thank our audiences here and on radio, television, and the Internet. This program has been part of the Commonwealth Club's California Innovation Series, underwritten by Chevron Corporation. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place to be in the know, is adjourned.